the 23rd Flash, on Nature. First written as the 16th note of the 17th Flash, this part of the Rosellino was later designated as the 23rd Flash because of its importance, for it puts naturalistic atheism to death with no chance of reanimation and totally shatters the foundation stones of unbelief. A reminder, this treatise explains through 9 impossibilities, themselves comprising at least 90 impossibilities, just how unreasonable, crude, and superstitions is the way taken by those naturalists who are atheists. In order to cut short the discussion here, and because the impossibilities have been explained in part in other sections of the Rosellino, some steps in the arguments have been skipped. It occurs to one, therefore, how it is that those famously and supposedly brilliant philosophers accepted such blatantly obvious superstition and continue to pursue that way. Well, the fact is they cannot see its reality, and I am ready to explain in detail and prove through clear and decisive arguments to whomever doubts it that those crude, repugnant, and unreasonable impossibilities are the necessary and unavoidable result of that way. In fact, the very gist of their creed. Footnote number 1. What occasioned the writing of this treatise were the attacks being made on the Quran by those who called everything that their corrupted minds could not reach a superstition, who were using nature to justify unbelief, and were vilifying the truths of belief in a most aggressive and ugly fashion. Those attacks stirred up in my heart an intense anger which resulted in those perverted atheists and falsifiers of the truth receiving vehement and harsh slaps. Otherwise, the way generally followed by the Rosellino is mild, polite, and persuasive one. In the name of Allah, the Merciful, the Compassionate, their prophet said, "Is there any doubt about Allah, Creator of the heavens and the earth?" Quran, Surah 14, verse 10. By declaring the use of a rhetorical question that there cannot and should not be any doubt about Almighty Allah, this verse clearly demonstrates the divine existence and unity. A point to be mentioned before our discussion. When I went to Ankara in 1922, the morale of the people of belief was extremely high as a result of the victory of the army of Islam over the Greeks. But I saw an abominable current of atheism was treacherously trying to subvert, poison, and destroy their minds. "O Allah," I said, "this monster is going to harm the fundamentals of belief." At that point, since the above-mentioned verse makes self-evidently plain Allah's existence and unity, I sought assistance from it and wrote a treatise in Arabic consisting of a proof taken from the all-wise Quran that was powerful enough to disperse and destroy the atheistic current. I had it printed in Ankara at the Yenigun Press, but alas, those who knew Arabic were few, and those who considered it seriously were rare. Also, its argument was in an extremely concise and abbreviated form. As a result, the treatise did not have the effect that it should have done, and sadly, the current of atheism both swelled and gained strength. Now, I feel compelled to explain a part of the proof in Turkish. Since certain parts of it have been fully explained in other sections of the Rosellino, it will be written in summary form here. Those numerous proofs, in part, unite in this proof, so each may be seen as an element of this proof. Introduction. O man, you should be aware that there are certain phrases which are commonly used and imply unbelief. The believers also use them, but without realizing their implications. We shall explain 3 of the most important of them. The first, causes create this. The second, it forms itself. It comes into existence and later ceases to exist. The third, it is natural. Nature necessitates it and creates it. Indeed, since beings exist, and this cannot be denied, and each being comes into existence in a wise and artistic fashion, and since each is not outside time, but is being continuously renewed, then, O falsifier of the truth, you are bound to say either that the causes in the world create beings, for example, this animal, that is to say, it comes into existence through the coming together of causes, or that it forms itself, or that its coming into existence is a requirement and necessary effect of nature, or that it was created through the power of one all-powerful and all-glorious. Since reason can find no way apart from these four, if the first three are definitely proved impossible, invalid, absurd, the way of divine unity, which is the fourth way, will necessarily and self-evidently and without doubt or suspicion be proved true. The first way. This is to imagine that the formation and existence of things, creatures, occurs through the coming together of the causes in the universe. We shall mention only three of the numerous impossibilities. The first impossibility. Imagine there is a pharmacy in which there are hundreds of jars and phials filled with quite different substances. A living potion and a living remedy are required from those medicaments. So we go to the pharmacy, and we see they are to be found there in abundance, yet in great variety. We examine each of the potions and see that the ingredients have been taken in varying but precise amounts from each of the jars and phials. 1 ounce from this, 3 from that, 7 from the next, and so on. If 1 ounce too much or too little had been taken, the potion would not have been living and would not have displayed its special quality. Next, we study the living remedy. Again, the ingredients have been taken from jars in a particular measure, so that if even the most minute amount, too much or too little, had been taken, the remedy would have lost its special property. Now, although the jars number more than 50, the ingredients have been taken from each according to measures and amounts that are all different. Is it in any way possible or probable that the phials and jars should have been knocked over by a strange coincidence or sudden gust of wind, and that only the precise, though different, amounts that had been taken from each of them should have been spilt and then arranged themselves and come together to form the remedy? Is there anything more superstitious, impossible, and absurd than this? If an ass could speak, it would say, "I cannot accept this idea," and would gallop off. Similarly, each living being may be likened to the living potion in the comparison, and each plant to a living remedy. For they are composed of matter that has been taken in most precise measure from truly numerous and truly various substances. If these are attributed to causes and the elements, and it is claimed causes created these, it is unreasonable, impossible, and absurd 100 times over, just as it was to claim that the potion in the pharmacy came into existence through the phials being knocked over by accident. In short, the vital substances in this vast pharmacy of the universe, which are measured on the scales of divine determining and decree, and of the all-wise and pre-eternal one, can only come into existence through the boundless wisdom, infinite knowledge, and all-encompassing will. The unfortunate person who declares that they are the work of blind, deaf, and innumerable elements and causes and natures, which stream like floods, and the foolish, delirious person who claims that the wondrous remedy poured itself out when the phials were knocked over and formed itself, are certainly unreasonable and nonsensical. Indeed, such denial and unbelief is senseless absurdity. Second impossibility. If everything is not attributed to the all-powerful and all-glorious one, who is a single one of unity, but is attributed to causes, it necessitates that many of the elements and causes present in the universe intervene in the being of every animate creature. Whereas the different mutually opposing and conflicting causes should come together of their own accord in complete order, with the finest balance and in perfect concord, in the being of a tiny creature like a fly, is such an obvious impossibility that anyone with even an iota of consciousness would say, "This is impossible, it could not be." The tiny body of a fly is connected with the most of the elements and causes in the universe. Indeed, it is a summary of them. It is not attributed to the pre-eternal and all-powerful one. It is necessary for those material causes to be themselves present in immediate vicinity of the fly. Rather, for all of them to enter into its tiny body, and even for them to enter each of the cells of its eyes, which are minute samples of its body. For if a cause is of a material nature, it is necessary for it to be present in the immediate vicinity of, or inside, its effect. And this necessitates accepting that the constituents and elements of the universe are physically present inside that minute cell, a place too small even for the tip of its antenna, and that they work there in harmony like a master. A way such as this then shames even the most foolish of the sophists. Third impossibility. It is an established rule that, if a being has unity, it can only have issued from a single being from one hand, particularly if it displays a comprehensive life within a perfect order and sensitive balance. It demonstrates self-evidently that it did not issue from numerous hands, which are the cause of conflict and confusion, but that it had issued from a single hand that is all-powerful and all-wise. Therefore, to attribute a well-ordered and well-balanced being, which has unity such as that, to be the jumbled hands of innumerable, lifeless, ignorant, aggressive, unconscious, chaotic, blind, and deaf natural causes, the blindness and deafness of which increase with their coming together and intermingling among the ways of numberless possibilities. It is as unreasonable as accepting innumerable impossibilities all at once. If we leave this impossibility aside and assume that material causes have effects, these effects can only occur through direct contact and touch. However, the contact of natural causes is with the exteriors of living beings. And yet we see that the interiors of such beings, where the hands of material causes can neither reach nor touch, are 10 times more delicate, well-ordered, and perfect as regards art than their exteriors. Therefore, although tiny animate creatures, on which the hands and organs of material causes can in no way be situated, indeed, they cannot touch the creature's exteriors all at once even, are more strange and wonderful as regards their art and creation than the largest creatures, to attribute them to those lifeless, unknowing, crude, distant, vast, conflicting, deaf and blind causes, can result only from a deafness and blindness compounded to a number of animate beings. The second way. This is expressed by the phrase, it forms itself. It too involves many impossibilities and is absurd and impossible in many aspects. We shall explain 3 examples of these impossibilities. First impossibility. Are you obstinate denier? Your egotism has made you so stupid that somehow you decide to accept 100 impossibilities all at once. For you yourself are a being and not some simple substance that is inanimate and unchanging. You are like an extremely well-ordered machine that is constantly being renewed and a wonderful palace that is undergoing continuous change. Particles are working unceasingly in your body. Your body has a connection and mutual relations with the universe, in particular with regard to sustenance and perpetuation of the species. And the particles that work within it are careful not to spoil the relationship nor break the connection. In this cautious manner, they set about their work as though taking the whole universe into account. Seeing your relationships within it, they take up their positions accordingly, and you benefit with your external and inner senses in accordance with the wonderful positions that they take. If you do not accept that the particles in your body are tiny officials in motion in accordance with the law, the pre-eternal and all-powerful one, or that they are an army or the nibs of the pen of divine determining, with each particle as the nib of a pen, or that they are the points inscribed by the pen of power, with each particle being a point, then in every particle working in your eye, there would have to be an eye such as could see every limb and part of your body as well as the entire universe, with which you are connected. In addition to this, you would have to ascribe to each particle an intelligence equivalent to that of 100 geniuses, sufficient to know and recognize all your past and your future, and your forebears and descendants, the origins of all the elements of your being and the sources of all your sustenance. To attribute the knowledge and consciousness of 1,000 Platos to a single particle of one such as you, who does not possess even a particle's worth of intelligence in matters of this kind, is a crazy superstition 1,000 times over. Second impossibility. Your being resembles 1,000-domed wondrous palace in which the stones stand together in suspension and without support. Indeed, your being is 1,000 times more wonderful than such a palace, for the palace of your being is renewed continuously in perfect order, leaving aside your truly wonderful spirit, heart, and other subtle faculties. Each member of your body resembles a single-domed part of the palace. Like the stones of a dome, the particles stand together in perfect balance and order, demonstrating the eye and the tongue, for example, each to be a wondrous building, an extraordinary work of art and miracle of power. If those particles were not each official's dependent on the command of the master architect of the universe, then each particle would have to be both absolutely dominant over all other particles in the body and absolutely subordinate to each of them, and both equal to each and with regard to its dominant position opposed, and both the origin and source of most of the attributes that pertain only to the necessarily existent one, and extremely restricted, and both in absolute form and in the form of a perfectly ordered individual artifact that could only, through the mystery of unity, be the work of a single one of unity. Anyone with even a particle of consciousness would understand what an obvious impossibility this is to attribute such an artifact to those particles. Third impossibility. If your being is not written by the pen of the pre-eternal and all-powerful one, who is a single one of unity, and is instead printed by nature and causes, there would have to be printing blocks in nature, not only to the number of cells in your body, but to the number of the thousands of combinations which are arranged in concentric circles. Because, for example, if this book, which we hold in our hand, is written, a single pen may write it relying on the knowledge of its writer. If, on the other hand, it is not written and is not attributed to the writer's pen, and if it is said that it exists on its own accord, or it is ascribed to nature, as a printed book, it would be necessary for there to be a different iron pen for each letter so that it could be printed. In a printing press, there have to be pieces of type to the number of letters in the alphabet, so that letters in the book could come into existence by means of them, pens to the number of those letters being necessary in place of a single pen. As may be seen, sometimes a whole page is written in a single large letter from among those letters with a small pen in fine script, in which case 1,000 pens would be necessary for one letter. Rather, if it took the form of your body, with all its components, one within the other, in concentric circles, there would have to be printing blocks in each circle for each component to the number of combinations that they form. Now, see, if you claim this, which involves 100 impossibilities, to be possible, then again, if they are not attributed to a single pen, for those well-ordered, artistic pieces of type, faultless printing blocks, and iron pens to be made, further pens, printing blocks, and letters to the same number as themselves would be necessary. And they too would have to have been made. And they too would have to be well-ordered and artistically fashioned, and so on. It would carry on in succession and ad infinitum. There, you too understand. This way of thinking is such that it involves impossibilities and superstitions to the number of particles in your body. O denier of Allah, see this and quit the way of misguidance. The third way. Nature necessitates it, nature makes it. This statement contains many impossibilities. We shall mention three of them by way of examples. First impossibility. If the art and creativity, which are discerning and wise, to be seen in beings, and particularly in animate beings, are not attributed to the pen of divine determining and power of the pre-eternal sun, and are instead attributed to nature and force, which are blind, deaf, and unthinking, it becomes necessary that nature either should have present in everything machines and printing presses for their creation, or should include in everything power and wisdom enough to create and administer the universe. The reason for this is as follows. The sun's manifestations and reflections appear in all small fragments of glass and droplets on the face of the earth. If those miniature, reflected, imaginary suns are not ascribed to the sun in the sky, it is necessary to accept the external existence of an actual sun in every tiny fragment of glass smaller than a matchhead, which possesses the sun's qualities, and which, though small in size, bears profound meaning, and therefore to accept actual suns to the number of pieces of glass. In exactly the same way, if beings and animate creatures are not attributed directly to the manifestation of the pre-eternal sun's names, it becomes necessary to accept that in each being, and especially animate beings, there lies a nature, a force, or quite simply a God that will sustain an infinite power and will, and knowledge and wisdom. Such an idea is the most absurd, superstitious, and of all the impossibilities in the universe. It demonstrates that a man who attributes the art of the creator of the universe to an imaginary, insignificant, unconscious nature is without a doubt less conscious of the truth than an animal. The third way. Nature necessitates it. Nature makes it. This statement contains many impossibilities. We shall mention three of them by way of examples. First impossibility. If the art and creativity, which are discerning and wise, to be seen in beings, and particularly in animate beings, are not attributed to the pen of divine determining and power of the pre-eternal Son, and are instead attributed to nature and force, which are blind, deaf, and unthinking, it becomes necessary that nature either should have present in everything machines and printing presses for their creation, or should include in everything power and wisdom enough to create and administer the universe. The reason for this is as follows. The sun's manifestations and reflections appear in all small fragments of glass and droplets on the face of the earth. If those miniature, reflected, imaginary suns are not ascribed to the sun in the sky, it is necessary to accept the external existence of an actual sun in every tiny fragment of glass, smaller than a match head, which possesses the sun's qualities and which, though small in size, bears profound meaning, and therefore to accept actual suns to the number of pieces of glass. In exactly the same way, if beings and animate creatures are not attributed directly to the manifestation of the pre-eternal sun's names, it becomes necessary to accept that in each being, and especially animate beings, there lies a nature, a force, or quite simply a God that will sustain an infinite power and will, and knowledge and wisdom. Such an idea is the most absurd and superstitious of all the impossibilities in the universe. It demonstrates that a man who attributes the art of the creator of the universe to imaginary, insignificant, unconscious nature is without a doubt less conscious of the truth than an animal. Second impossibility. If beings, which are most well-ordered and well-measured, wise and artistically fashioned, are not ascribed to one who is infinitely powerful and wise, and instead are attributed to nature, it becomes necessary for there to be present in every bit of soil as many factories and printing presses as there are in Europe, so that each bit of soil can be the means for growth and formation of innumerable flowers and fruits, of which it is the place of origin and workshop. The seeds of flowers are sown in turn in a bowl of soil, which performs the duty of a flower pot for them. An ability is apparent in the bowl of soil that will give shapes and forms which differ greatly from one another to all the flowers sown in it. If that ability is not attributed to the all-glorious and all-powerful one, such a situation could not occur without there being in the bowlful of soil immaterial, different and natural machines for each flower. This is because the matter of which seeds, like sperm and eggs for example, consist is the same. That is, they consist of an orderless, formless, paste-like mixture of oxygen, hydrogen, carbon and nitrogen. Together with this, since air, water, heat, and light also are each simple, unconscious, and flow against everything in floods, the fact that all different forms of those flowers emerge from the soil in a most well-ordered and artistic fashion self-evidently and necessarily requires that there are present in the soil, in the bowl, immaterial, miniature printing presses and factories, to the number of presses and factories in Europe, so that they could weave this great number of living fabrics and thousands of various embroidered textiles. Thus you can see how far the unbelieving thought of the naturalists has deviated from the realm of reason. And although brainless pretenders who imagine nature to be creator claim to be men of science and reason, see just how distant from reason and science is their thought, so that they have taken a superstition that is in no way possible, that is impossible, as a way for themselves. See this and laugh at them. If you ask, if such extraordinary impossibilities and insurmountable difficulties occur when beings are attributed to nature, how are those difficulties removed when they are attributed to the single and eternally besought one? And how is the difficult impossibility transformed that easily by necessity? The answer: we saw in the first impossibility that the manifestation of the sun's reflection displays its radiance and effect through miniature imaginary suns with complete ease and lack of trouble in everything, from the minutest inanimate particle to the surface of the vastest ocean. If each particle's relationship with the sun is severed, it then becomes necessary to accept that the external existence of an actual sun could subsist with a difficulty at the level of impossibility in each of those minute particles. Similarly, if each being is ascribed directly to the single and eternally besought one, everything necessary for each being can be conveyed to it through a connection and manifestation with an ease and faculty that is at the level of necessity. If the connection is severed and each being reverts from its position as an official to being without duties and is left to nature and its own devices, it then becomes necessary to suppose that with 100,000 difficulties and obstacles that reach the degree of impossibility, blind nature possesses within it a power and wisdom with which to create and administer the universe so that it might bring into existence the wonderful machine of the being of an animate creature like a fly, which is a tiny index of the universe. This is impossible not just once but thousands of times over. In short, just as it is impossible and precluded for the necessarily existent one to have any partner or like in respect of his essence, so too is the interference of others in his dominicality and his creation of beings impossible and precluded. As for the difficulties involved in the second impossibility, as is proved in many parts of the Rasalinu, if all things are attributed to the single one of unity, all things become as easy and trouble-free as a single thing. Whereas, if they are attributed to causes in nature, a single thing becomes as difficult as all things. This has been demonstrated with numerous decisive proofs, and a summary of one of them is as follows. If a man is connected to a king through being a soldier or an official, by reason of the strength of that connection, he may perform duties far exceeding his own individual strength. He may, on occasion, capture another king in the name of his own king, for he himself does not carry the equipment and sources of strength necessary to carry out the duties and work he performs, nor is he compelled to do so. By reason of the connection, the king's treasuries and the army, which is behind him and his point of support, carry his equipment and sources of strength. That is to say, the duties he performs may be as grand as the business of a king and as tremendous as the actions of an army. Indeed, through being an official, an ant destroyed the Pharaoh's palace. Through the connection, a fly killed Nimrod off. And through the connection, the seed of a pine the size of a grain of wheat produces all the parts of a huge pine tree. Footnote number 3. Yes, on there being this connection, the seed receives an order from divine determining and displays those wonderful duties. Should the connection be severed, the creation of the seed would require more equipment, power, and art than the creation of the mighty pine tree, for it would be necessary for the pine tree out there on the mountain, which is the work of divine power, to be physically present together with all its limbs and parts in what is only the potential tree within the seed and is the work of divine determining. For the mighty tree's factory is the seed. The determined potential tree within it becomes manifest in the external world through divine power and becomes a physical pine tree. Were the connection to be severed and man discharged from his duties as an official, he would be compelled to carry the equipment and sources of strength necessary for his work himself. He would then only be able to perform the duties in accordance with the sources of strength and ammunition that he was able to carry. If he was required in this situation to carry out his duties with the extreme ease of the first situation, it would be necessary to load on his back the sources of an army's strength and the arsenals, ammunitions, factories of a king. Even clowns who invent stories and superstitions to make people laugh would be ashamed at this fanciful idea. In short, to attribute all beings to the necessarily existent one is so easy as to be necessary, while to attribute their creation to nature is so difficult as to be impossible and outside the realm of reason. Third impossibility. The following two comparisons, which are included in other parts of the Risalino, explain this impossibility. A wild savage entered a palace which had been built in an empty desert and completed and adorned with all the fruits of civilization. He cast an eye over its interior and saw thousands of well-ordered and artistically fashioned objects. Because of his boorishness and lack of intelligence, he said, "No one from outside had a hand in this. One of the objects from inside must have made this palace together with all its contents," and started to investigate. However, whatever he looked at, even his untaught intelligence could not fathom out how it had made those things. Later, he saw a notebook in which had been written the plan and program of the palace's construction, an index of its contents and the rules of its administration. For sure, the notebook too, which was without hand, eye, or implement, like the rest of the objects in the palace, was completely lacking the ability to construct and decorate the palace. But since he saw that in comparison with all the other things, the notebook was related to the whole palace by reason of its including all its theoretical laws, he was obliged to say, "There, it is this notebook that has organized, ordered, and adorned this palace, and has fashioned all these objects and set them in their places." He transformed his uncouthness into ludicrous jabber. Thus, exactly like this comparison, a boor who subscribed to naturalist thought, which denies Allah, entered the palace of the universe, which is infinitely more well-ordered, more perfect, and everywhere full of miraculous instances of wisdom than the palace in the comparison. Not thinking that it was the work of art of the necessarily existent one, who was outside the sphere of contingency, and shunning that idea, he saw a collection of laws of divine practice and an index of dominical art, which are like a slate for writing and erasing of divine determining in the sphere of contingency, and like a constantly changing notebook, the laws of functioning of divine power, and are extremely mistakenly and erroneously given the name nature. And he said, "These things require a cause, and nothing else appears to have a relationship with everything like this notebook has. It is true that reason will in no way accept this unseeing, unconscious, and powerless notebook could carry out this creation, which is the work of an absolute dominicality and requires infinite power. But since I do not recognize the eternal maker, the most plausible explanation is to say the notebook made it and makes it, so I shall say that," to which we reply, "Are you mistaken, unfortunate? Your foolishness exceeds anything imaginable. Lift your head out of the swamp of nature and look beyond yourself. See an all-glorious maker to whom all beings, from particles to planets, testify with their different tongues and whom they indicate with their fingers. Behold the manifestation of the pre-eternal inscriber who fashions the palace and who writes its program in the notebook. Study his decree, listen to the Quran, be delivered from your delirious raving." Second comparison. A rustic bumpkin entered the bounds of a splendid palace and saw there the uniform actions of an extremely well-disciplined army carrying out its drill. He observed a battalion, a regiment, and a division stand to attention, stand at ease and march, and open fire when commanded as though they were a single private. Since his rude, uncultured mind could not comprehend, so denied that a commander had given the order by the country's laws and by royal decree, he imagined that the soldiers were attached to one another with strings. He thought of what wonderful string it must be, and was amazed. Later, he continued on his way till he came upon a magnificent mosque like Hagia Sophia. He entered it at the time of Friday prayer and watched the congregation of Muslims rising, bowing, prostrating, and sitting at the sound of a man's voice. Since he did not understand the Sharia, which consists of a collection of immaterial, revealed laws, nor the immaterial rules proceeding from the lawgiver's command, he fancied the congregation to be bound to one another by physical string, and that this wonderful string had subjected them and was making them move like puppets. And coming up with this idea, which is so ridiculous as to make the most ignorant roar with laughter, he went on his way. Exactly like this comparison, an atheist who subscribed to materialist thought, which is denial and pure brutishness, entered the universe, which is a splendid barracks of the monarch of pre-eternity and post-eternity for his innumerable forces, and a well-ordered mosque of that pre-eternal, all-worshipped one. He imagined the immaterial laws of the ordering of the universe, which proceed from the pre-eternal monarch's wisdom, each to have material and physical existence, and supposed the theoretical laws of the sovereignty of dominicality and rules and ordinance of the greater Sharia, the Sharia of creation, which are immaterial and exist only as knowledge, each to have external, material, and physical existence, but to set up in the place of divine power those laws which proceed from divine attributes of knowledge and speech, and only exist as knowledgeable, and to attribute creation to them, then to attach the name nature to them, and to deem force, which is merely a manifestation of dominical power, to be an independent, almighty possessor of power, is a thousand times more low-fallen ignorance than the ignorance in the comparison. In short, the imaginary and insubstantial thing that naturalists call nature, if it has an external reality, can, at the very most, be the work of art. It cannot be the artist. It is an embroidery and cannot be the embroiderer. It is a set of decrees. It cannot be the issuer of decrees. It is a body of laws of creation and cannot be the lawgiver. It is but a created screen to the dignity of Allah and cannot be the creator. It is passive and created and cannot be a creative maker. It is a law, not a power, and cannot possess power. It is the recipient and cannot be the source. To conclude, since beings exist and were stated at the beginning of this treatise, reason cannot think of a way to explain the existence of beings apart from the four mentioned, three of which were decisively proved through the clear impossibilities to be invalid and absurd, then necessarily and self-evidently the way of divine unity, which is the fourth way, is proved in a conclusive manner. The fourth way, in accordance with the verse quoted at the beginning. Is there any doubt about Allah, creator of the heavens and the earth? Quran, Surah 14, verse 10, demonstrates clearly, so that there can be no doubt or hesitation, the divinity of the necessarily existent one, that all things issue directly from the hand of his power, and the heavens and earth are under his sway. O you unfortunate worshipper of causes and nature, since the nature of each thing, like all things, is created, for it is full of art and is being constantly renewed, and like the effect, the apparent cause of each thing is also created, and since for each thing to exist, there is need for much equipment and many tools, there must exist a possessor of absolute power who creates the nature and brings the cause into existence. And that absolutely powerful one is in no need of impotent intermediaries to share in his dominicality and creation. Allah forbid. He creates cause and effect together directly. In order to demonstrate his wisdom and manifestation of his names by establishing an apparent causal relationship and connection through order and sequence, he makes causes and nature avail to the hand of his power so that the apparent faults, severities, and defects in things should be ascribed to them, and in this way his dignity is preserved. Is it easier for a watchmaker to make the cogwheels of a clock and then arrange them and put them in order to form the clock? Or is it easier for him to make a wonderful machine in each of the cogwheels and then leave the making of the clock to the lifeless hands of those machines? Is that not beyond the bounds of possibility? Come on, you judge with your unfair reason and say. And is it easier for a scribe to collect ink, pen, and paper and then using them, proceed to write out a book himself? Or is it easier for him to create in the pen and the ink a writing machine that requires more art and trouble than the book and can be used only for that book, and then say to the unconscious machine, "Come on, you write it," and then himself not interfere? Is that not 100 times more difficult than writing it himself? If you say, "Yes, it is 100 times more difficult to create a machine that writes a book rather than writing it out oneself," but it is not in a way easier because the machine is a means of producing numerous copies of the book. The answer: through his limitless power, the pre-eternal inscriber continuously renews infinite manifestations of his names so as to display them in ever-differing ways, and through his constant renewal, he creates the identities and special features in things in such a manner that no missive of the eternally besought one or dominical book can be the same as any other book. In any case, each will have different features in order to express different meanings. If you have eyes, look at the human face. You will see that from the time of Adam until today, indeed until post-eternity, together with the conformity of their essential organs, each face has a distinguishing mark in relation to all the other faces. This is a definite fact. Therefore, each face may be thought of as a different book, only for the artwork to be set out different writing sets, arrangements, and compositions are required, in order to both collect and situate the materials, and to include everything necessary for the existence of each, a completely different workshop will be required. Now, knowing it to be impossible, we thought of nature as a printing press. But apart from the composition and writing, which concern the printing press, that is, setting up the type in a specific order, the substances that form an animate being's body, the creation of which is 100 times more difficult than the composition and ordering, must be created in specific proportions and particular order, brought from the furthest corners of the cosmos and placed in the hands of the printing press. But in order to do all these things, there is still need for the will of the absolutely powerful one who creates the printing press. That is to say, this hypothesis of the printing press is totally meaningless superstition. Thus, like the comparisons of the clock and the book, the all-glorious maker, who is powerful over all things, has created causes, and so too he creates the effects. Through his wisdom, he ties the effect to the cause. Through his will, he has determined a manifestation of the greater Sharia, the Sharia of creation, which consists of the divine laws concerning the ordering of all motion in the universe, and determined the nature of beings, which is only to be a mirror to the manifestation in things, and to be a reflection of it. And through his power, he has created the face of that nature, which has received external existence, and has created things on that nature, and has mixed them one within the other. Is it easier to accept this fact, which is the conclusion of innumerable most rational proofs? In fact, is one not compelled to accept it? Or is it easier to get the physical beings that you call causes in nature, which are lifeless, unconscious, created, fashioned and simple, to provide the numberless tools and equipment necessary for the existence of each thing and to carry out those matters, which are performed wisely and discerningly? Is it not utterly beyond the bounds of possibility? We leave it to you to decide with your unreasonable mind. The unbelieving nature worshipper said, "Since you have asked me to be fair and reasonable, I have to confess that the mistaken way I have followed up to now is both a compounded impossibility and extremely harmful and ugly." Anyone with even a grain of consciousness would understand from your analysis above that to attribute the act of creation to causes and nature is precluded and impossible, and that to attribute all things directly to the necessarily existent one is imperative and necessary. I say, all praise be to Allah for belief, and I believe in him, only I do have one doubt. I believe that Almighty Allah is the Creator, but what harm does it do to the sovereignty of his dominicality if some minor causes have a hand in the creation of insignificant matters and thereby gain for themselves a little praise and acclaim? Does it diminish his sovereignty in some way? The answer: as we have conclusively proved in other parts of the Risale Nur, the mark of rulership is that it rejects interference. The most insignificant ruler or official will not tolerate the interference of his own son, even, within the sphere of his rule. The fact that, despite being caliph, certain devout sultans had their innocent sons murdered on the unfounded apprehension that the sons would interfere in their rule demonstrate how fundamental is this law of the rejection of interference in rulership, and the law of prevention of participation, which the independence intrinsic to rulership necessitates, has shown its strength in the history of mankind through extraordinary upheavals whenever there had been two governors in a town or two kings in a country. Thus, if the sense of rulership and sovereignty, which is a mere shadow in human beings, who are impotent and in need of assistance, rejects interference to this degree, prevents the intervention of others, does not accept participation in its sovereignty, and seeks to preserve the independence of its position so jealously, then, if you can, compare this with an all-glorious one whose absolute sovereignty is at the degree of dominicality, whose absolute rulership at the degree of divinity, absolute independence at the degree of oneness, an absolute lack of need at the degree of absolute power, and understand what a necessary requirement and inevitable necessity of that rulership is this rejection of interference, prevention of participation, and repulsion of partners. Concerning the second part of your doubt, you said, if some of the worship of some insignificant beings is directed towards certain causes, what deficiency does this cause to the worship of all beings, from particles to planets, which is directed towards the necessarily existent one, the absolute object of all worship? The answer: the all-wise creator of the universe made the universe like a tree, with conscious beings as its most perfect fruit. And among conscious beings, he made man its most comprehensive fruit, and man's most important fruit, indeed, the result of his creation, the aim of his nature, and the fruit of his life are his thanks and worship. Would that absolute sovereign and independent ruler, that single one of unity, who creates the universe in order to make himself known and loved, give away to others man, the fruit of the whole universe, and man's thanks and worship, his most elevated, totally contrary to his wisdom? Would he make vain and futile the result of creation and fruit of the universe? Allah forbid. Would he be content to give away the worship of creatures to others in a way that would deny his wisdom and dominicality? And although he demonstrates through his actions that he wishes to make himself known and loved to an unlimited degree, would he cause his most perfect creatures to forget him by handing over to causes their thanks and gratitude, love and worship, and cause them to deny the exalted purposes in the universe? O friend who has given up the worship of nature, now it is for you to say. To which he replied, all praise be to Allah. These two doubts of mine have now been resolved, and your two proofs concerning the divine unity, which demonstrate the only true object of worship is He, and that nothing other than He is worthy of worship, are so brilliant and powerful that to deny them would require as much arrogance as to deny the sun and the day. Conclusion. The person who gave up atheistic naturalism and came to believe said, all praise be to Allah, I no longer have any doubts, but there are still a few questions about which I am curious. First question. We hear many lazy people and those who neglect the five daily prayers ask, what need has Almighty Allah of our worship that in the Quran He severely and insistently reproves those who give up worship and threatens them with such a fearsome punishment as hell? How is it that in keeping with the style of the Quran, which is moderate, mild and fair, to demonstrate the ultimate severity towards an insignificant minor fault? The answer: Allah Almighty has no need of your worship, nor indeed of anything else. It is you who needs to worship, for in truth you are sick. As we have proved in many parts of the Risale-Nur, worship is a sort of remedy for your spiritual wounds. If someone who is ill responds to a compassionate doctor who insists on his taking medicines that are beneficial for his condition by saying, "What need do you have of it that you are insisting in this way? You can understand how absurd it would be." As for the severe threats and fearsome punishments in the Quran concerning the giving up of worship, they may be likened to a king who, in order to protect his subjects' rights, inflicts a severe punishment on an ordinary man in accordance with a degree that his crime infringes on those rights. In the same way, the man who gives up worship and ritual prayer is violating in a significant manner the rights of beings who are like the subjects of the monarch of pre-eternity and post-eternity, and it is in fact acting unjustly toward them. For the perfections of beings are manifested through the glorification and worship performed by that aspect of them which is directed towards their Maker. The one who abandons worship does not and cannot see this worship. Indeed, he denies it. Furthermore, beings occupy an exalted position by reason of their worship and glorification, and each is a missive of the Eternally Besought One, and a mirror to the names of its sustainer. Since he reduces them from their high positions and considers them to be unimportant, lifeless, aimless, and without duties, he is insulting them, and denying and transgressing their perfections. Indeed, everyone sees the world in his own mirror. Allah Almighty created man as a measure and scale for the universe, and from the world he gave a particular world to each person. This world he colours for him in accordance with his sincere beliefs. For example, a despairing, lamenting, weeping person sees beings as weeping and in despair, while a cheerful, optimistic, merry person sees the universe as joyful and smiling. A reflective man given to solemn worship and glorification discovers and sees to a degree the certain, truly existent worship and glorification of beings, while a person who abandons worship through either neglect or denial sees beings in a manner totally contrary and opposed to the reality of their perfections, thus transgressing their rights. Furthermore, since the one who gives up a prayer does not own himself, he wrongs his own soul, which is a slave of its true owner. His owner delivers awesome threats in order to protect his slave's rights from the evil commanding soul. Also, since he has given up worship, which is the result of his creation and the aim of his nature, it is like an act of aggression against divine wisdom and dominical will, and he therefore receives punishment. In short, the abandoner of worship both wrongs his own soul, which is the slave and totally owned property of Almighty Allah, and wrongs and transgresses the rights of the perfections of the universe. Certainly, just as unbelief is an insult to beings, so is the abandonment of worship a denial of the universe's perfections. And since it is an act of aggression against divine wisdom, it is deserving of awesome threats and severe punishment. Thus, it is to express this deservedness and the above facts that the Quran of Miraculous Exposition chooses in a miraculous way that severe style, which, in complete conformity with the principles of eloquence, corresponds to the requirements of the situation. The second question. The person who had given up naturalism and come to believe next asked, "It is indeed a vast truth that each being is dependent on divine will and dominical power in every aspect, in all its functions, qualities and actions. By reason of its vastness, our narrow minds cannot comprehend it. However, the infinite abundance that we see around us, and the boundless ease in the creation and formation of things, and the infinite ease and facility in the way of unity, which was established through your proofs above, and infinite ease that verses of the Quran like the following clearly demonstrate and expound. Your creation and resurrection is as a single soul." Quran Surah 31, verse 28. And "the matter of the hour shall be but as the twinkling of the eye, or even closer." Quran Surah 16, verse 77. Show this mighty truth to be a matter that is most acceptable and rational. What is the wisdom and secret of this ease? The answer. This matter was elucidated in a most clear, decisive, and convincing fashion in the explanation of, "And he is powerful over all things," which forms the 10th phrase of the 20th letter. In particular, it was demonstrated even more clearly in the addendum to that letter that when attributed to the single maker, all beings become as easy as a single being. If they are not attributed to that single one of unity, the creation of a single creature becomes as difficult as that of all beings, and a seed as problematical as a tree. When they are ascribed to their true maker, the universe becomes as easy and trouble-free as a tree. A tree as easy as a seed. Paradise as easy as a spring. And the spring as easy as a flower. We shall now point out briefly one or two evidences that have been explained in detail in other parts of the Rasalino, out of the hundreds which explain the underlying reasons for the instances of wisdom in the conspicuous, boundless abundance and profusion of beings, the ease of the great number of individuals in each species, and the fact that well-ordered, artistically fashioned, and valuable beings come into existence with immense speed and ease. For example, if the command of 100 soldiers is given to one officer, it is 100 times easier than if the command of one soldier is given to 100 officers. And if to equip an army it is assigned to one headquarters, one law, one factory, and one commander of one king, it quite simply becomes as easy as equipping a single soldier. In the same way, if to equip one soldier it is referred to numerous headquarters, numerous factories, and numerous commanders, it becomes as difficult as equipping an army. Because in order to equip a single soldier, it would require as many factories as are necessary for a whole army. Again, since by reason of the mystery of unity, the vital necessities of a tree are provided through one root, one center, according to one law, it produces thousands of fruits as easily as a single fruit. This is plain to see. If unity changes to multiplicity, and all the necessities vital for each fruit are provided from many different places, to produce each fruit becomes as difficult as to produce the tree. And to produce a single seed even, which is a sample and index of the tree, becomes as difficult as the tree. Because all the necessities vital for the tree's life are necessary for the seed. Thus, there are hundreds of examples like these which show that it is easier for thousands of beings to come into existence through unity than for a single being to come into existence through multiplicity and ascribing partners to Allah. Since this truth has been proved with absolute certainty in other parts of the Rasalino, we refer you to those. Here only explain a most for this ease and facility from the point of view of divine knowledge, divine determining, and dominical power. It is as follows. You are a being. If you attribute yourself to the pre-eternal or powerful one, he creates you at a command through his infinite power out of nothing in an instant like striking a match. If you do not do this and rather attribute yourself to physical causes and nature, then since you are a well-ordered summary, fruit, and miniature index and list of the universe, in order to make you, it would be necessary to sift with a fine sieve the universe and its elements, and to gather in precise measure from all corners of the universe the substances of which your body is composed. For physical causes only gather and join together. It is confirmed by people of reason that they cannot create out of nothing what is not present in them. Since this is the case, they would be compelled to collect together the body of a tiny animate being from every corner of the cosmos. Now understand what ease there is in unity, divine unity, and what difficulties lie in misguidance and attributing partners to Allah. Secondly, there is an infinite ease also with regard to divine knowledge. It is like this. Divine determining is an aspect of divine knowledge. It determines a measure for each thing, which is like its particular and immaterial mold. The determined measure is like a plan or model for the thing's being. When divine power creates, it does so with extreme ease in accordance with a determined measure. If the thing is not attributed to the all-powerful One of Glory, who possesses all-embracing, infinite, and pre-eternal knowledge, as was described above, Not only thousands of difficulties appear, but hundreds of impossibilities. For if it was not for the determined measure which exists in divine knowledge, thousands of material moulds with external existences would have to be employed in the body of even a tiny animate being. So understand one reason for the infinite ease in unity and the endless difficulties in misguidance and ascribing partners to Allah. Realize what a veracious, correct, and exalted truth is stated by the verse. The matter of the hour shall be but as the twinkling of the eye, or even closer. Third question. The former enemy and now rightly guided friend then asked, philosophers, who have made many advances these days, claim that nothing is created out of nothing, and nothing is annihilated and goes to nothing. There is only composition and decomposition, and this makes the factory of the universe run. Is this correct? The answer. Since the most advanced philosophers, who did not consider beings in the light of the Quran, saw that the formation and existence of beings by means of nature and causes was so difficult as to be impossible in manner proved above, they diverged into two groups. One group became sophists, abdicating reason, which is exclusive to human beings and falling lower than mindless beasts. They found it easier to deny the universe's existence and even their own existences than to follow the way of misguidance, which claims that causes and nature have the power to create. They therefore denied both themselves and the universe and descended into absolute ignorance. The second group saw that in misguidance, according to which causes and nature are creator, the creation of a fly or seed even entails innumerable difficulties and requires a powerful unacceptable to reason. They were therefore compelled to deny the act of creation and say, nothing can exist out of nothing. Seeing total annihilation also to be impossible, they declared, what exists cannot go to nothing. They fancied an imaginary situation in which combining and decomposition, gathering together and dispersion, although through the motion of particles and the winds of chance. Now see, those who consider themselves to be the most intelligent are the most profoundly ignorant and stupid. Understand just how ludicrous, debased, and ignorant misguidance makes man, and take a lesson. Indeed, a pre-eternal power created the heavens and the earth in 6 days. Every year creates 400,000 species simultaneously on the face of the earth. And in 6 weeks, every spring constructs a living world more full of art and wisdom than the world itself. Thus, it is more foolish and ignorant than the sophists, the first group above, to deny the act of creation and deem it unlikely that, like a chemical, that when applied shows up invisible writing. Pre-eternal power should give external existence to beings, which though externally non-existent, exist as knowledge, and whose plans and measures are determined in the realm of a pre-eternal knowledge. These unfortunates are absolutely impotent and have nothing at their disposal apart from the faculty of will. Although they are inflated like pharaohs, they can neither annihilate anything nor create anything from nothing, even a minute particle. And so, although nothing comes into existence out of nothing at the hand of causes and nature on which they rely, out of their stupidity, they say, nothing comes from non-being and nothing goes to non-being. And they even extend this absurd and erroneous principle to the absolutely all-powerful one. Indeed, the all-powerful one of glory has two ways of creating. The first is through origination. The first is through origination and invention. That is, he brings a being into existence out of nothing, out of non-existence, and creates everything necessary for it also out of nothing, and places those necessities in its hand. The second is through composition, through art. That is, he forms certain beings out of the elements of the universe in order to demonstrate subtle instances of wisdom, like displaying the perfections of his wisdom and manifestations of many of his names. Through the law of providing, he sends particles and matter, which are dependent on his command, to those beings and employs the particles in them. Yes, the absolutely all-powerful one creates in two ways. He both originates and he composes. To annihilate what exists and to make exist what does not exist is most simple and easy for him. It is one of his constant and universal laws. The man, therefore, who says he cannot give existence to what does not exist, in the face of a power that in one spring makes exist out of nothing the forms of attributes of 300,000 animate creatures, and besides their particles, all their conditions and states, such a man should himself be obliterated. The person who gave up nature and embraced truth said, "Praise and thanks be to Allah Almighty, to the number of particles in existence, for I have attained complete belief. I have been saved from delusion and misguidance. Not one of my doubts remains. All praise be to Allah for the religion of Islam and complete and perfect belief. All glory be unto you. We have no knowledge save that which you have taught us. Indeed, you are all-knowing, all-wise." Quran Surah 2, verse 32.